Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Every week, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate. But it can only be a debate if you'll join in. That's why I need, above all, your telephone calls on 44208601455. And if you get through onto the program, make sure the volume on your television set is down at zero, or no one will hear either of us. Or you can SMS the show on 4478008066, or you can email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. There has been a wave of protest across the country at the breaking news, which we dealt with at length last week, at the threat from the self-described independent regulator of the UK media, except for the BBC, the world's largest broadcaster, that's left to regulate itself. Ofcom appear to be getting ready to take action that would effectively put us off the air, at least on the Sky platform here in the United Kingdom. People of all political persuasions are outraged at the fact that Britain is in war after war after war, apparently in the interests of liberty, which includes, of course, freedom of speech and expression, yet is apparently ready to suppress liberty and freedom of speech and expression here in our own country. I have here a file of arguments that tonight and hereafter I and others will be deploying against the independent regulator Ofcom. We'll just find out soon enough, I guess, how independent it is. And the killing continues in Bahrain. The state of emergency, so-called, has been lifted, so-called. But the foreign occupation continues, and the occupation is still gunning down peaceful protesters protesting for human rights and democracy, including, of course, the right freely to speak truths that others might not want to hear. Amnesty International has today denounced the Bahraini dictatorship for its continued suppression of human rights. Britain, on the other hand, as I revealed here last week, is actually training the Saudi forces occupying Bahrain and killing the democracy protesters. You really couldn't make it up. And of course, as we also brought you here the week before, the picture, almost live, certainly moments after it was taken, of the Crown Prince of Bahrain, whose family are wanted for war crimes by many in the world, being warmly shaken by the hand by the British Prime Minister David Cameron on the steps of Downing Street. And surely, today and tomorrow is the end game for Ali Abdullah Saleh, the Arab world's longest serving dictator, as tonight in the northern part of Sana'a, the capital, thousands of government opponents, having despaired of their peaceful efforts to bring down the regime in their millions, which were met, of course, by volley after volley, have taken up arms and are now battling the forces of the dictator. My money is on a victory for the people, and soon, maybe tomorrow afternoon. These are, of course, my own personal views. They're not the views of Press TV. They're not the views of any government in the world. And moreover, if you have a different point of view, I want to prioritize it. So call in if you have a different point of view to me, and I promise you, you'll be on the air. John in Surrey is the first caller on Ofcom and the Arab Revolution. John, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, good evening, George.
Good evening.
Yeah, on Press TV, I think it will be such a shame if because Press TV gives news other stations shy away from.
Well, that's right. Bahrain's a case in point, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
You don't see much about Bahrain on BBC or Sky or even Al Jazeera these days.
Very true. And so I think really we ought to start a campaign in this country to get support from ordinary people in the UK to put pressure and make sure that this doesn't happen. And also, can I say, long term, look at the effects of these kind of tactics are counterproductive. You cannot silence people. If there's something there, you know, the global village is here, everyone knows about it, and Press TV tries to give a balanced view, and as I said, more importantly, they give the news that other stations shy from.
Well, we have a point of view, just like Fox News has a point of view. Why isn't Ofcom every day investigating Fox News? The answer is because it's Fox News, and because it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, and because it's towing a line which is approved of by the government here in the United Kingdom, and apparently its independent media regulator. We, on the other hand, are constantly badgered by Ofcom, because our point of view doesn't suit the prevailing orthodoxy. And as that great English man of letters, whom you'll know very well, Dr. Johnson, said, the dictatorship of the prevailing orthodoxy is the grimmest dictatorship of them all. Don't you think? Thank you very much. John, are you still there? Go ahead. You wanted to talk about the Arab Revolution.
Indeed. Now, let me get on to that. Now, the struggle in Yemen and Bahrain will go on until these governments give way. That's inevitable. These changes in the Arab world were inevitable. Something had to trigger it off, and it happened a few months ago. And now that it has started, there's no going back. It won't be easy, but it will come to fruition. Now, these changes... what I like to also say is the effect this will have on the bigger issue of the area, which is the Palestinian and Israeli question. Now, these changes will inevitably put real pressure on the Israeli government, and I hope that the people of Israel will rise to the occasion and like the rest, like the Arab world, start putting real pressure on their government to force them to make real and serious concessions.
Well, John, nobody would be happier than me if that were to happen. But I have to tell you, don't put the kettle on for that outcome. Because actually, the pressure from the street in Israel is worse than the attitude of the government. You saw what happened in Operation Cast Lead. After 22 days of mass bombardment of Palestinian refugees locked up for the duration, the Israelis had a general election, and they kicked out the government that had done all the bombing and all the killing, and elected a government even more extreme than the government that had done the bombing and the killing. John, thanks for the call. Let's go to the Emerald Isle, to Ireland, to talk to Meg about Ofcom. Meg, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. I just want to say that my 15-year-old son introduced me to Press TV.
Really? Well, that's excellent news.
And your last caller said, you know, the ordinary people should rise up. Well, injustices happen and the ordinary people don't, because they're too busy being part of the system and paying their taxes and worrying about, I don't know, wage packets and whether or not there are too many immigrants coming into Ireland or England. The ordinary people won't do anything, and it's Press TV actually is out there, and it's the only station I let my children watch.
That's really excellent. I started off just watching myself on Press TV. Then I started watching others. Then I started watching the news whilst channel hopping between the BBC, Sky, Al Jazeera English, Press TV. Now, Press TV is almost all that's on in my household, because actually, it's the best news coverage. It is the most courageous, and it is the clearest voice of the voiceless. I'll tell you what, Meg, I don't know how much you know about Ofcom over in Ireland, but I'm discovering some very, very interesting things. For example, if Ofcom were to try and fine us, guess where the money would go? To Her Majesty's Treasury. In other words, Ofcom can fine Press TV and give the money to David Cameron and William Hague. Well, if it was me, I wouldn't be paying any money to them. And I don't know if you're aware, the Ofcom is actually funded by the broadcasters, and the bigger the broadcaster, the more the funds. So that probably explains why some broadcasters never get it in the neck from Ofcom, and some are never done getting it in the neck from Ofcom. Meg, in Ireland, Thank you very much for the call, and God bless your 15-year-old for introducing you to this station. Let's go back to London, talk to Shujat on the same subject. Shujat, welcome to the show again, sir.
Oh, hi there, George. How are you?
Very well. Nice to hear from you again.
Nice to hear. Yeah, just about this Ofcom thing that you've been talking of for a couple of weeks, and I'm quite concerned.
Yes.
I mean, why don't you think of appealing against the hearing and filing a complaint against the persons or person who made the ruling, you know, a legal appeal? Get advice from a solicitor.
Well, we're waiting for the tariff, if you like. They found us guilty, absurdly, actually, because I've just been listening and I'm reading the text of an interview on BBC Radio 4 with John Humphreys.
Yeah.
And guess what? Two prisoners of war in a Libyan rebel prison camp.
Yes.
In which a very lengthy and extended interview and confession is given by these two Gaddafi soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Confession to heinous crimes, which, if they are to be believed, would be capital crimes. As it happens, I didn't believe a word of the so-called confessions, but that's another matter. There's one law in this country, Shujat,
yes,
for some broadcasters, and another law, or several other laws, for other broadcasters. What do you say?
I don't you think they're institutionally racist? I mean, organizationally racist against Press TV because the Iranian channel, Muslim channel, they had to suppress the voice because where's the voiceless people?
No,
like
I don't think it's racism, Shujat, because there will be many, many stations that are operated by people of color, people of different races.
So much
it's political. It's political. It's because we tell our story from a perspective that the British government doesn't like. And we know that already.
Exactly, yes.
We know that from WikiLeaks. We know it from the Sunday Times reports. We know it from the conversations between British and American officials about us. We know it from the actions of the NatWest Bank, who cut our account, which had millions of pounds in it, and was being operated perfectly without notice, leaving us high and dry without a bank account. So it's political rather than racism.
From any lawyer or solicitor, possibly?
Oh, for sure. We're going to fight this, Shujat,
yes,
every inch of the way.
We're
going to fight it every inch of the way. We're just waiting for their next move. Shujat, thanks for the call. Let's stay in the United Kingdom. Go to Abu Bakr on Ofcom and Bahrain. Abu Bakr, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening,
George.
Sir.
Okay, my comment about Bahrain is, I just surprised about what Saudi Arabia is doing in there, because this is shame, you know. As a leader of all Muslim countries or Muslim community, normally you have to be in justice about it, Bahrain, because what is doing Saudi is doing there is just nonsense, you know. Because what the reason to let these people to be killing these people every day. And some place he's supposed to go is like Palestine.
Well, I'll tell you, Abu Bakr, it's really very simple. But first of all, I have to say to you that the so-called government of so-called Saudi Arabia are not the leaders of the Muslim world. In fact, they're not the leaders of the Muslim anything. First of all, nobody appointed them as the leaders. They conquered the holy places by physical force. They hold on to them by physical force. They are a brute tyranny whose members loot their country to the tune of billions of dollars every year. There are 30,000 male members of the so-called Saudi royal family. That doesn't sound very Islamic to me. And if you look at their lifestyles and what they do with their money around the world, I assure you there's nothing much to do with Islam about that. But the reason that they're occupying Bahrain is to prop up the dictatorship there. Because if the dictatorship there falls, this will hasten the day when their own dictatorship falls. It's really as simple as that. Some people try to play the sectarian card that it's Shiite, Sunni, and so on. Not at all. The Bahraini dictatorship oppresses all Bahrainis. And the Saudi dictatorship oppresses all Saudis. Abu Bakr, thanks. Let's stay in London. Talk to Anjum on the Yemen and Ofcom. Anjum, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, sir. Hello. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Welcome. Go ahead.
Sir, I just wanted to say, why does humanity laws not apply to West and USA? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
That is my first question. And my second question is, you know, where they're killing Muslims and the bosses are from USA, like, I mean, slaves of USA, yes? So there is no humanity. There is no human laws. And no one is looking at the human laws, where the humanity is. Even though they are killing this and that and everything, because the boss is a slave of USA, so close your eyes. Yes?
And what was your first question? Remind me.
Well, my first question is that why the human laws, the humanity laws, human rights laws,
uh-huh,
why only us, not on USA? And
well, of course,
and,
of course, they don't even always apply to us. The United States of America has a little prison camp in illegally occupied Cuba called Guantanamo Bay, where all American laws are suspended and where people have now for more than a decade been held, well, almost a decade, been held and tortured and some of them killed. The Patriot Act in the United States suspends very important tranches of the American Constitution and American civil liberties. We ourselves have seen our civil liberties, for example, the issue of imprisonment without trial, steadily stripped away, some returned, two steps forward, one step back, and all of that. But of course, Muslim blood is cheap. And the cheapest Muslim blood of all appears to be in those dictatorships that are closest to the Western governments. And I refer, of course, to Yemen and to Bahrain. Anjum, thanks for the call. Let's stay in London. Go to Adam on Britain training the Saudi occupation force. Adam, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much, Judge. I think British is still thinking about the colonialism again. However, now they've got their own interest to be represented and prevented as far as the world new order is coming. Now, we remember that during the Tony Blair era, there was a deal, arms deal between British and Saudi Arabia, under which British undercut, corrupted, bribed some Saudi officials to win the contract, the known fact. When investigation was going to be launched, Tony Blair said no, it will ruin the trade agreement between Saudi Arabia and Britain. Therefore, investigations wasn't done. Now, in Saudi Arabia, we know the British interest there. And in Bahrain, we know the British and American interest there. Therefore, for the people of the Saudis to have their own will, to have their say, to curtail the British and the American interest in Bahrain and the Saudi Arabia, it will not be in the interest of these two countries, which, of course, they think they are superior to the other country. And they are
well,
right.
The point is, Adam, that you can take a short-sighted view of your interests and a long-term view. But first, I need to correct something. The Al-Yamama military contract, which was worth billions of pounds sterling, was signed not in the Tony Blair era, but began in Mrs. Thatcher's era, when she was the Prime Minister. It's true that Tony Blair stopped the Serious Fraud Office from continuing with its investigation, which would have led to criminal charges because a case to answer had been assembled by the SFO. It's true also that it has been investigated by the Public Accounts Committee, which audits the British government. The Public Accounts Committee has already investigated this corruption, but its report has never been published and probably will never be published, but was completed and is extant and is under lock and key in the British Parliament because it would have destabilized relations with the Saudi dictatorship to the detriment in the short term of the British companies doing business with them. My point is, one day the Saudi dictatorship will fall, just like Mubarak fell, and him and his sons, who looked all powerful just a few months ago, are now going on trial for their lives on August the 3rd. And when a democratic government is elected in Egypt, they will remember all of those who made the 30-year dictatorship of Mubarak possible. And they will discriminate against those who made Mubarak's dictatorship possible. So what goes round comes round. It's best to conduct your state affairs according to principle. And if you do that, then in the short term, in some places, sometimes, you'll lose out. But in all the places, in the long term, you will gain. And in any case, it's much better for your soul. And much better on the last day when we have to answer to the Almighty too. Thanks very much for that call. Let's go to the comment wall and take a couple of emails. Remember, we want your point of view, your country up here. Whatever you'd like to say. Imran from the UK. Freedom of speech is not more than a tool for the establishment to control what the public can say, what they can't say. Where was the BBC in the Gaza war, or the rest of them for that matter, sitting outside doing nothing? Big up for Press TV. Thanks very much, Imran, for that. Of course, Israel refused to allow the media to enter into the Gaza Strip under bombardment. But as a very, very good book by Greg Philo called More Bad News from Israel has just pointed out, the performance of the mainstream broadcasters during Operation Cast Lead was nothing less than absolutely shameful. Funnily enough, Ofcom have got absolutely nothing to say about it. Let's go back to the comment wall and take another email. This one is from Jason in the UK. Press TV is the only news source I'll entertain in my home. My Skybox is left switch on to Press TV overnight, mine too. If it is taken off air, I'll source it via the internet. Under no circumstances will I ever entertain the vile right-wing garbage of the lamestream press in my home. The only reason my television is connected to a satellite dish is Press TV. If Press TV is taken off, my television will be disconnected from the dish and used only as a DVD monitor. Well, that's very loyal of you, I must say, Jason. Of course, they'll not be able to put us off the air. They might be able to put us off the Sky platform, but we'll be on many other platforms, including on the internet. Thanks very much indeed. Let's take a call from Manny in London about the UK training the Saudis and Ofcom. Manny, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much, George.
You're welcome. Go on, sir.
I wanted to talk about your points that you've been mentioning today.
Mm-hmm.
So the British taxpayer army is training the Saudi Wahhabi monarchy today, actually, like on this very day, and they're arresting and torturing women who drive and raping Bahraini girls. And the British are still sending the lads there, even after they know this is coming out in their own lamestream mainstream media. Also, when it comes to Yemen, it's all about something that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah of Lebanese, the resistance movement, said a couple of years ago after his victory against the occupation entity. He said the West and Americans and all the other people who've colonized and done mass genocide in their territories they now occupy, they don't care if somebody's Muslim or black or brown or white, something that you said earlier. It's not about the racism. He goes, they don't care if you want to pray all day or if you want to fast all day, as long as you serve their interests in the region.
Well, I didn't know that Sayyid Hassan had said that, Manny, but it's an absolutely brilliant encapsulation of the point I made at greater length earlier. They have nothing against Muslims, nothing against Sunni Muslims, nothing against Shi'i Muslims, as long as they're Muslims who do what they're told, as long as they're Muslims on their knees rather than Muslims on their feet and looking them in the eye and demanding respect, respecting themselves and demanding respect from other people. I must point out that I'm not aware of any Saudi raping of Bahraini girls. I am aware of claims by prisoners who have been released that they were threatened with rape. I'm not aware of any evidence that shows actual rape took place. But I think the point that you made is absolutely correct. Saudi Arabia imprisons women for driving motor cars. It cuts off people's heads, cuts off their hands. It is a brute tyranny and dictatorship. Why are we sending our army to train their soldiers? I'll be back after the news with the second half of comment. It'll be coming up right after the news. We're talking about Yemen, we're talking about Bahrain, and we're talking about Ofcom, the independent regulator of the British broadcast media. I promise you, you will not want to miss the second half of comment with me, George Galloway, back after this. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV every week, bringing you the big conversation, the great debate. Tonight, we're talking about the continued killing in Bahrain, which is being largely ignored by other broadcasters. We're talking about the massacres going on in Yemen and the fact that the people have had enough and thousands have now taken up arms and are moving against the longest-serving dictator in the Arab world, who until only a few weeks ago was backed to the hilt by the British and American governments. And, of course, the government of so-called Saudi Arabia next door, that friend of liberty, where women are put to prison for driving motor cars. And we're talking about Ofcom, which is the independent regulator of the British broadcast media, except for the BBC, the biggest British broadcaster, which it doesn't regulate. They say that they are an independent regulator. I suppose we'll find that out soon enough, because Ofcom have, in the face of all the facts, found against Press TV in relation to a complaint, and speculation is mounting that the WikiLeaks cable, which was leaked, of course, a few months ago by WikiLeaks, which showed us a conversation actually taking place between British and American officials about how they could close down Press TV. And, of course, the Sunday Times, the sewer of choice of the British intelligence and British state machines, has already told us a couple of Sundays ago that the British government would like to shut us down. Well, we'll see if Ofcom, the independent regulator, does their bidding. Meanwhile, let's go to Mahmoud, who's in London on Yemen. Mahmoud, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, George.
Very nice to hear from you. Go ahead, sir.
Nice talking to you. Actually, I would like to speak to you about a couple of weeks now, and I couldn't, but it's not too late anyway. I just wanted to mention about Yemen.
Yeah.
I don't believe in all this army defecting to people and so on. I think there is a plan. That's otherwise it would have been coup and finish. That's one. And secondly, about Libya, I believe personally they want to separate the country to two or three states to make more money out of it. And the other thing, actually, I just wanted to tell you, I don't believe actually none of this revolution has been succeeded up to now. And they've got so many like Mubarak, which is a can replace. And I just wanted you to...
Yeah, well, as it happens, Mahmoud, and you know you can count on honesty from me, I don't accept any of that. First of all, I'm always extremely wary when people call up my radio show or my television show and say, there's a plan. There's millions of actors on the streets of Yemen for months. A plan can't manipulate and move millions. There are defections from patriotic elements in the Yemeni military. Unfortunately, Ali Abdullah Saleh still has a great deal of support within the military, who have remained up until now, I think that will change by tomorrow evening, loyal to him. And he does also have some support amongst the Yemeni people. But the majority of Yemenis want to see the back of the dictatorship, and they are going to, I believe. It's ridiculous to suggest that the West would prefer to divide Libya. In fact, they'd prefer to conquer Libya. They'd prefer Libya to be one country ruled by a group of people who are answerable to them, who owe them for their positions. That's the way to make most money out of Libya. Of course, they'll settle for the division of the country if they're unable to conquer all of it. But to say that they want to separate it is just silly, in my opinion. Thirdly, the idea that none of these revolutions have been successful is the classic arch-conspiracy theorists' fatalism and pessimism and demobilizing, demotivating propaganda. The people of Tunisia overthrew Ben Ali, and soon they will have a democratic election. The people of Egypt overthrew Mubarak. His sons and him are on trial. They've already been fined scores of millions of dollars. They've already been dispossessed of millions of dollars worth of assets. The Egyptian people have moved mountains to get rid of this dictatorship. And soon, later this year, they will have a democratically elected government. Now, let's not disrespect those who gave their life's blood and their blood and their efforts to bring about the downfall of these tyrannies. And one by one, all of them will fall. Let's go to Brighton. Talk to Will on Afghanistan. Will, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello there. Hello, George. It's actually William Hague here, the Foreign Secretary.
I thought it was William. I haven't seen you for a long time. We used to go up in the lift together all the time.
How are you doing? I wanted to talk about Afghanistan, because you're often, you know, so against Afghanistan, and I don't know why we're fighting for your freedom out there, George.
Absolutely brilliant. That's William Hague, who's obviously having a, well, what shall I say, an away day in Brighton, maybe in one of those nice hotels on the seafront down there on the Corniche of the English Riviera. William, thanks for phoning the show. And of course, you're not fighting for my freedom in Afghanistan or anyone else's freedom. In fact, you're fighting the Afghans in Afghanistan. There's now no Al-Qaeda. There's no foreign forces in Afghanistan except yours. And you're fighting the Afghans in their own country. Yeah, and guess what, Will? Guess what? The Afghans are winning. Here's Lyndon.
We will beat them, George. You don't have to worry about that one.
Unfortunately, Will, out in Australia and Japan and all the other places in the world where this is being watched, don't actually know who William Hague is, never mind what he sounds like. But I thought you were great. Thanks very much. Let's talk to Lyndon in Kent on Yemen. Lyndon, welcome to the show, my friend.
George, thanks very much. It's a pleasure and honour to speak to you again.
Thank you, sir.
May I just say I'm really enthused that we have such a highly principled man who's willing to stand up for the rights of other people.
Thank you,
sir. I think it's really fantastic.
Thank you, sir. Very, very brave.
Three very quick points. First one, I'd like to pay tribute to all those brave women, men and women who have stood up for what they believe in both Yemen and also Bahrain, even though they have powerful forces moving against them. They are very, very brave.
Indeed so.
Losing their jobs and suffering horrendously in some cases.
Yeah.
The second point is to do with geography, and if you, I had a look at a map not so long ago, and if you knock out Yemen, if you take Yemen and Bahrain away, you can see that Saudi Arabia is going to be squeezed quite significantly,
yes.
And you've got Egypt as well on the other side.
Sure.
So things could be totally different in a new world.
I really believe that, Lyndon. As I've often said on here, there are decades when nothing happens, but there are weeks when decades happen, and those decades are happening now. And all has changed utterly as a result of the overthrow of the Egyptian dictatorship in particular. When the Yemen dictator flees, as surely very soon he will, then you're right. The dominoes are all set for the final collapse of all of the tyrants. Let's go to Birmingham, talk to Mohammed about Ofcom. Mohammed, welcome to the show, my friend.
George, nice talking to you.
And you, sir, go ahead.
First of all, I wish to thank you for your good effort.
Thank you, sir.
George, I'm kind of like concerned about people, media, not reporting what is right in conflict zones.
Yeah.
If it's so, what is the point of actually listening to the media if we're not getting what is right?
Well, I think the important thing now, Mohammed, is we're no longer dependent upon either the state broadcaster, the self-regulating but publicly financed BBC, or as I dubbed it before the war, the Bush and Blair Corporation, BBC. Neither are we dependent upon Mr. Murdoch and his many-headed empire, nor are we actually dependent on terrestrial or even satellite TV emanating from British sources at all. I have 11,600 videos on YouTube. I have the best part of 70,000 followers on Facebook. in my various sites. We are able to reach people through Press TV, whether from other platforms or through the internet, all across the world. There are people watching this tonight in every part of the world. And no independent regulator in Britain, funded by the big broadcasters, handing over fines that it levies to William Hague and David Cameron, is going to shut us up. They'll just make it more difficult for you, a British taxpayer, to be able to watch us, that's all.
1 year old. My 1 year old knows about the Press TV. And if there's anything we can do, can you please let us
of course.
Know what we can do to save Press TV?
We will.
One other important thing I want to talk about, George.
Go on, Mohammed.
You talked about a very important thing in Bahrain. We talked about Muslim, but this is not Muslim, because it's a shame for Saudi killing Bahrainians. And the other point is, I want to point to the British government to please help Sierra Leone. The fake doctors are killing people every day in Sierra Leone. There are thousands and thousands of fake doctors. Everybody admitted in hospital is either told you have to have an operation, even though it doesn't require, and they get killed for unnecessary. Please, George, put your effort and put investigation in this area.
Well, people, I'm sure that our news department will have heard what you said, Mohammed. I can't vouch for it, I must say. It's news to me, but thanks for bringing it our way. Let's go all the way to Germany and talk to Kamal about the Yemen. Kamal, welcome to the show.
Yes.
How are you watching us, by the way? On the internet or on a satellite?
Thank you very much, George. First of all, I hope to see you again in Rafah to go to the Cairo, the capital. You got some problems with the police. We know this. And to go after in freedom to visit another country, Palestinian.
I'm hoping to do that very soon. Rafah. But so far, Kamal, the Egyptian military junta has not lifted the Mubarak ban on me traveling there. So I can't go to Palestine, either to the West Bank or to Gaza. But Palestine is in my
through
heart
Egypt,
and in my eyes.
I'll talk to you and I'll do my best that you will go through Cairo.
Thank you. Thank you. Kamal, first of all, I want to ask you a question.
Yes. Please.
How are you watching us? Are you watching us on satellite or on the internet?
No, in satellite.
Excellent. That just goes to show
satellite,
there's nothing Ofcom can do to stop the world listening to Press TV.
I saw Press TV. Press TV have a very nice. I don't like to comparison the Press TV with the others. You spoke before about, I don't like to tell the name, but Press TV for us here in Germany, and for my wife too, is very rich with the subjects of
yes.
Very important things.
Kamal, I have to thank you and love you and leave you, because I need to go to Libya and talk to Ali about Western hypocrisy on Bahrain and Libya. Ali, welcome to the show. Particularly welcome, my friend.
Welcome, Mr. George.
Thank you for calling us. Which part of Libya are you in?
I'm in the middle part of Libya.
Okay, you're very welcome. Please tell us whatever you'd like to say.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the hypocrisy of the Western countries dealing with the Libyan situation.
Yeah.
What happens in Libya is just a conspiracy to control the Libyan oil. It's obvious to every Libyan in Libya. Mr. George, I live in a small Libyan village named Taourga, close to Misrata, in the middle part of Libya. NATO gives cover to the rebels, and the rebels attack the village, and they kill the civilians. No one asks about them. They killed my father, who is 70 years old. The Libyan rebels commit crimes in Benghazi. They kill, rape, and shut down electricity from districts loyal to Gaddafi. That happens in Benghazi. Just the day before yesterday, rebels assassinated an army general named Abdullah al-Futmani in Al-Kish district in Benghazi, just because he refused to join the rebels. Can you imagine that Qatar put pressure on Arab satellite to close the Libyan channel? and France put pressure on the European satellites to close the Libyan channel. This is the democracy of the Western governments. And why don't they talk about the crimes committed against the civilians in Bahrain and Yemen? Why don't they support them? They are civilians. These protesters in Bahrain and Yemen are peaceful. They are unarmed, unlike what happens in Libya. Please, I'd like to kindly ask Press TV to investigate these accidents happened in Benghazi.
Well,
and the crime is made to commit.
Well, Ali,
and the civilians are suffering Tripoli.
Ali, that's a point of view that we don't often hear from the horse's mouth, as it were. And I'm very grateful that you chose us and this evening to make your points, which were very powerful indeed. Let's go to Glenn in Portsmouth about Ofcom. Glenn, welcome to the show, my friend.
Greetings. I'm privileged to be able to talk to you again.
Thanks.
I would like to say about this suggestion by Ofcom and other elements that Press TV should be closed down, that if that were tragically to happen, it would be a great disaster for many people, because many people for many people, Press TV provides the only opportunity they will ever get to present their own views, to explain their own position, to explain their own situation.
I appreciate that, Glenn. I appreciate that very much. We'll need to wait and see what the independent regulator does, of course. But
yes, of course,
be sure that we'll fight it every inch of the way through every court in Britain and Europe.
I'm very encouraged to hear that, Mr. Galloway. I'm very, very encouraged to hear that. And I greatly respect your intelligence and courage, of course, sir. And I hope it will be successful. I was going to say that for many people, it provides the only opportunity to present their views. You know, it gives a voice to the voiceless, the
Indeed.
Depressed, the disempowered.
Indeed. Glenn in Portsmouth, thanks very much for that call. Let's go to London, talk to Elaine about Palestine. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Hello. I just would like you to make me understand why the Arab world do not put all their power to help their Palestinian brothers and sisters regain their land. For instance, I know that there are second and third generation Palestinians living in the Middle East, in the Arab world, and they are being classed as refugees, and they're not even given their own right to live in the land that they were born. They're also part of the Arab world.
Yes, Elaine, Palestine is one country from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, and the Palestinian people are one people. Whether they're living in Rio de Janeiro in exile, or in Lebanon as refugees, or under occupation in Jerusalem and the West Bank, or under siege in Gaza. Wherever they are one people, and their rights are inalienable and indissoluble. The answer to your question is that the Arab world, until very recently, was ruled, virtually without exception, from one end to the other by tyrants, whose purpose in being in power was to keep their people down and to protect the interests of Western powers who kept them in turn in power. But that's all, Elaine, changing. And it's going to change, I think, tomorrow afternoon still further. Let's go to France, talk to Michel about Libya. Michel, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yes, Michel, go on.
Thank you, big fan. But I'd like to wonder to you right now, that NATO is stalling too much in Libya. I'd like to talk about how France, China, and Russia are coinciding with Gaddafi. They are doing harsh deals with him. They are killing the Libyan people by not doing anything at all.
What do you mean not doing anything at all? They're bombing more savagely than they've ever bombed.
No, they are holding back.
No, they're not holding back. Actually, the number of sorties and the number of bombing raids... No, listen to me, Michelle, because what you're saying is factually inaccurate. More bombs were dropped in the last week than in any other week in the course of the entire conflict. So you're just factually wrong.
No, I disagree with you there.
Well, you can't disagree with me. It's not a question of opinion, Michelle. It's a question of fact. Look it up. NATO are savagely bombing Tripoli, the capital of Libya, now every night and starting 2 days ago, during the day as well. You must know that.
Oh, yeah, but still, they could have done more.
You want them to kill more people?
It took them the point where the Gaddafi troops were right at Benghazi.
Michelle, there's no NATO troops, is there? Because NATO troops are explicitly excluded by the United Nations Security Council resolution. Unless you know something we don't, there are no NATO troops in Libya, are there? Or was that a slip of the tongue?
They are just told they don't want to waste their profits in Libya. It is very obvious. Where are the helicopters then?
Well, Michelle, I understand that you want more bombardment, and I infer that you want NATO troops. You might get the former. I don't think you'll get the latter. Let's talk to Jacob in Slovenia. This may be the first call we've ever had from Slovenia on Israel. Jacob, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, George. First of all, I want to say that I love the show. Press TV a lot.
Thank you.
The only news channel I like beside the Euronews.
Thank you.
It's different. And I want to ask you about Israel, since everybody suspects that Israel is a nuclear power, about why doesn't anybody take a tougher stand on them and does not force them to allow United Nations nuclear inspectors in, and everybody just picks on Iran all the time, even though we know that Iran only wants to have peaceful nuclear power.
Now, so, Jacob, are you watching us on satellite or on the internet?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Satellite, excellent. Well, look, Jacob, that's the 64,000 shekel question. How come Israel, which has illegally acquired hundreds of nuclear weapons and the missiles to deliver them, and we know where they are at Dimona, how come they have been able to assemble this fleet of nuclear weapons of mass destruction without a single inspection or demand for inspection, without a single sanction, without a single threat of being invaded or bombarded? How come they were empowered to build those nuclear weapons by Britain and by France and by the United States of America? I wish I knew the answer to that. All I can say is that it's absolutely clear that there's one law for Israel and another law for other countries, especially Muslim countries that don't bow the knee to the imperial powers. Well, it's been marvelous for me. I hope it was for you. And if you enjoyed it, catch me on Sunday night on The Real Deal or next week at the same time on Comment.
Hello, if you just comment your name and the place you left that number, and just make sure that your delivery volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You redirect me through the phone number, and then we'll be back.